Frances Southwick wanted to be a doctor for as long as she could remember. As a kid, she collected old popsicle sticks to use as tongue depressors. She volunteered at medical facilities and eventually ended up in med school in West Virginia. Southwick did her residency at UPMC Shadyside, which included stints at a number of Pittsburgh hospitals. Now she's written a book called Prognosis Poor, One Doctor's Personal Account on the Beauty and the Perils of Modern Medical Training, in which she talks about the stress and depression experienced by those working to become doctors. Southwick stopped by the studio to talk about her book and says despite warnings about the hardship residency would bring, she thought she was prepared.
I sort of thought that I was invincible. I was able to get through a lot of other types of trials before, and I couldn't hear what people were trying to warn me about. Some of the physicians that I shadowed during high school and during college literally just said, do not do this. I wouldn't tell anyone to do this. I would discourage any of my kids from doing this. Do not, this is a dangerous endeavor. And you seem like a nice kid. Like, think about something else. You're not going to make the money that you might expect, which that's not why I did it anyhow, obviously, but it's life-threatening, really, the training process.
And I think that's something that very few people actually know. Most of your book is about those years, but if you could kind of do a recap as much as possible for kind of the places where you worked and what you started to understand about those warnings once you were in it.
It's so complicated because it's such a huge array of skills that you need to be able to just make it through a single day. You have to be able to work with almost no sleep. You have to be able to expect what an attending is wanting from you and deliver it. You have to be able to do manual things like procedures, be up on your feet all the time, answer questions at a moment's notice. So I did a lot of things, like I delivered babies, I delivered actually dead babies. I mean, there are a lot of really intense things. I watched people die. I helped them try not to die. I told them that they probably would. It took care of everybody, as far as age range goes. Also worked at a nursing home for a while, so a huge array of things. Family medicine is like, it just has a huge variety.
Well, and I feel like you're only touching on like the patient interaction side, because I mean you're changing locations, so you're navigating new hospitals with different procedures. You have tests that you have to study for, lectures to prepare, notes to dictate. I mean, the bureaucracy side and the kind of the paperwork side is also a massive part of it as well, right?
Yes, that's enormous. People talk a lot about how residency may have improved by reducing the total number of work hours to is a maximum on average per week. But the difference is people used to spend unlimited amounts of hours in the hospital, and now you take the work home with you, essentially, and there's a lot more paperwork. Like you're saying, there's a lot more bureaucracy.
So why did you want to write this book?
I started just naturally writing it, not as a book, but just as a way to validate myself and my own experiences to feel like I wasn't going crazy. And then it evolved into a book because I felt like there wasn't anything similar that really filled this specific need, talking about the difficulties of a family medicine residency training program.
And so you thought that this might be helpful to somebody who might just be starting out.
Yes, exactly. I wish I had had something along these lines during pre-med. Maybe I still wouldn't have heeded my own words and picked something else, but definitely during med school and during residency, I think it would be a big comfort to people going through the process and people trying to understand and support residents. It sort of explains what they're going through. So I wrote down last night, and I was like, oh, what if she asks what kind of advice I would give to people who are going into residency? And so I have some of those. You want to hear those?
Sure.
Okay. So the first one would be cutting out all non-essential time wasters by having a short commute. So living near the hospital, being okay with not wearing makeup and not doing your hair. I mean, this seems like little things.
Having an assigned parking spot.
Yes, exactly. Just small, small time takers to just sort of limit those as much as possible so that you can have more sleep. The second thing would be to preserve one thing that is only yours. Like if the most important thing to you outside of work is your relationship, you know, putting that first, and possibly one other hobby that you can go to maybe once a month at least as something to take your mind off things. For me, it was drawing and writing.
It sounds like, you know, sleep deprivation is one of the big ones. Mm-hmm. But there's also a sense of feeling like you're failing at something that you want desperately to excel at.
Mm-hmm.
How can someone be helped who's in that situation?
I think it would have helped to know that that is the feeling to expect out of residency, that it's, especially with family medicine, I'll explain why, you always feel like you're a beginner. Why family medicine specifically is the breadth of information that we learn just means that literally we are a beginner every month. We start every 4 weeks anew with a new specialty. So you're sort of learning a whole career in 4 weeks, but you're expected to be able to perform the duties of that career on the first day of those 4 weeks. So it's difficult. That makes it very difficult. Makes it feel like you just don't know anything.
I guess something else you mentioned is that, you know, everybody has weaknesses, but nobody really knows them until you bump up against whatever that challenge is. I mean, how do you address that? How do you get the help for people in the areas they need it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's so true. I really didn't know my weaknesses until I started residency. I thought I did. But I did not know how terrified I was to not have the answer to a question. It's probably one of my biggest fears, or was at least, of just looking stupid in front of a group of respected colleagues. It's very painful. And that's what the first year of residency is all about, not having the answers and being asked in front of a large group of colleagues over and over and over again, and sort of being made an example of so that everyone can learn from your lack of knowledge.
But it's not personal, right?
It's not personal. It really isn't, but it's difficult to not take it personally when you're sort of a hyper overachiever, not just an overachiever, but an obsessive overachiever. I think that defines a lot of people who enter medicine. So you have to be so vigilant about academics to get to the end.
Well, I mean, that's part that's so crazy to me, too, is the amount of stress and despair inflicted on residents who have this job, and the fact that that there wouldn't be more of a helping hand along the way, and that you'd kind of be left to, you know, sink or swim.
So let me explain. There are a couple of things that are sort of an attempt at a patch, or at least a last-minute escape route, I guess, for residents. So we have a faculty mentor that we meet with quarterly. The thing about that is we're constantly trying to impress and constantly trying to appear very strong so that we aren't removed from the program. So it's difficult to use that mentorship how it's probably designed, to ask for help and get the kind of help you need. So that's one attempt that I appreciate, but it falls desperately short. And the second thing that's available is, I think all residency programs have a counseling option. So there are 6 free counseling sessions if you feel really depressed. It's posed as this is for emergencies, if you are feeling like ending your life, call this number and get in for this service. I just feel like that's a little, sort of adds to the stigma, right, of having a difficult time in a difficult situation. I mean, everybody has that. So I think a better way would be to preempt this with mandatory meetings with therapists and just say, we know everybody has a hard time. You won't know what your most difficult time is going to be until you're actually there, and you may not feel strong enough to ask for help.
So something I really liked about your book is that I think for people that aren't in the medical field, it just seems very jargony. It's like the Army, very complicated, and you really talked about it in a way that, I mean, you explained things. You made it very straightforward to the commoner. I don't know. I guess I'm wondering the kind of feedback you've gotten so far. I mean, for me, you know, when I think, okay, this is going to be like a memoir about medical school, I think, here comes me not understanding most of a book.
Actually, I have my editor to thank for that, honestly. I mean, I tried to de-jargonize it before I sent it to her, and thank God she's not in medicine at all. She has no connection, and so that allowed her to have fresh eyes and say, you know, you need to explain these dozen words on these few pages. I mean, you just assume that the reader understands this, and she really helped me make it an accessible book, so it's not only for the medical field.
What if you had read this book before you started your residency? What do you think you would have taken away from it?
I think I would have reconsidered, honestly, or been more cautious, or I don't know. It's hard to know.
Do you really think you would have reconsidered? Because you worked so hard to get to that place.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's hard to know. I made an example. I don't know if you read that in the book yet, but there's a section that I just say, if you could go back in time and you were standing and waving on the shore, and you were waving at the people on the Titanic, and then you suddenly knew, like, these people are going to drown. Like, you suddenly had this information. You started screaming at them, like, don't do this. Jump off. You know, do whatever you can. Get in the lifeboats now. Just leave the boat. I think people would just, I mean, think that you were nuts. And, you know what I mean?
How did your residency change you?
I think it gave me a lot more empathy for a lot of different types of people. I mean, I would say I'm not the same person that I was before I started the process. I think a lot differently. I think of things in medical terms first, usually. I think quicker in some ways and much slower in other ways. So when I'm in a social situation, I'm even more awkward than I used to be. It's really difficult for me to just lighten up and just be able to be open in a regular conversation. I'm so trained to be an interviewer and to think about what's happening with someone else's physiology and problem solving and that linear type logical mindset.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Anything else you wanted to mention about the book or about your experience that I didn't ask?
I really want it to get into the hands of residents and med students and the close family and friends of those people so that everybody's on the same page and sort of understands the process at least a little more. If the process doesn't change quickly, at least we can understand it.
Well, thank you, Frances. Thanks for talking to me about your book.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Prognosis Poor will be available from booksellers October 10th.